Recorded Books presents The Heart is a Star by Megan Rogers, narrated by Susan Lyons. We grow accustomed to the dark, when light is put away, as when the neighbour holds the lamp to witness her goodbye. A moment, we uncertain step for newness of the night, then fit our vision to the dark and meet the road erect, and so of larger darknesses. Those evenings of the brain, when not a moon disclose a sign, or star come out within, the bravest grope a little, and sometimes hit a tree directly in the forehead. But as they learn to see, either the darkness alters, or something in the sight adjusts itself to midnight, and life steps almost straight. Emily Dickinson. 1. Like a splinter in my finger, I always thought if I left my mother alone, she would work herself out. As my phone rings and her rat-trap voice springs into action, I assume this time will be just like the others, that all I need to do is listen, withstand the burst of fire in my blood, say the words she needs to hear, and then hang up. For the past 27 years, on the 20th of December, I've heard the same declaration. "I'm tired, Layla," Mum would say. "Maybe it's the cold, or the town, or your father's shadow lurking." There would be a pause then, the silence magnifying her martyrdom. "Always," she would whisper. "Lurking." And I would think of her in that husk of a house, curled up beneath the faded painting of Lazarus, the phone cord wrapped around four of her fingers, her minus sign eyes. I would imagine the threadbare carpet and dusty childhood photographs. Outside, the soaked soil and the Huon pine trees, creating their own darkness under dense cloud. "The forecast is nothing but trouble," she'd declare. "The wind will blow salt into every nook and cranny." She'd stand and pace the kitchen linoleum, her feet making suction cap sounds, grief as energy. "I need to know that you will come for Christmas. Say it," she would hiss. "Say it, or you'll find me in the bathtub." And every time I would sigh. Plane tickets already purchased, never enough assurance. Her tone of voice turning over a heavy stone in my stomach, the weight that only children who've grown up with a bottomless pit parent can understand. We learn to ignore the heaviness. Hell, we learn to blame it on ourselves, until the only way we believe the load will lighten is by making ourselves as small as their problems are big. Part of me wished I could just say no, to see if she'd go through with the threat. "Yes, yes," I would always concede. "Of course we'll be there." But this time is different. The conversation starts the same as before, but my mother doesn't ask me to come, doesn't demand reassurance, and adds a never-spoken-before sentence. "After I'm gone, look in my wardrobe, the locked drawer. I need you to know the truth about your father. I just can't be around when you do. I've left the key under the kettle." The finality of those words like a rope's knotted end, which I try to hold on to, but which slips through my hands. The phone tucked between my ear and shoulder, I finish wiping down the kitchen counter, cup my hand beneath crumbs, run the water to wash them free. I let the tap stream scald my hand, and my skin winces from steam. She's never offered those details before. Since I was a teenager, I've lived with a constant feeling of something nameless and unknown. There were nights when I would lie awake, with the jangling wires inside me sparking and shorting. All I could do was walk around the house, sit in chairs and on benchtops, and wait for the light of morning. Knowing that I need the truth about Dad, but not knowing how to ask for it. Mum has gone quiet. I sit down, place the phone on speaker,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?